Lake Effect continues now on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. The presence of gray wolves in Wisconsin is considered a conservation success story. The wolf is native to the Great Lakes and other parts of the U.S., but the population dwindled in the 1950s. The gray wolf was placed on the federal endangered species list in 1975. And after the population recovered in 2012, the gray wolf was removed from the list. Wisconsin legislators followed that by passing a bill that allowed a wolf hunt and the controversial use of dogs. Wisconsin began to hold three annual hunts, and just 2 years later, a federal judge placed the wolf back on the endangered species list. Now, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is proposing it's time they be removed again. The decision was expected last month, but so far nothing has been issued. Adrian Wiedevan served as the state wolf biologist for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources from 1990 to 2013. He spoke with WUWM's environmental reporter Susan Benz about gray wolf management in the state.
When we were working on our 1999 wolf plan, we expected wolves to be delisted within a year or two. And we had some concern that the feds might delist wolves before we finish our plan. We don't have our plan ready yet. But as it turned out, that federal delisting has been waylaid, and the initial attempt went from a delisting to a downlisting, and that was completed in 2003, but reversed in 2005. Finally, delisting occurred in 2007, but it was reversed in 2008, and so we had it back and forth. The last delisting occurred in 2012 and then reversed again in 2014. And I think this back and forth has just created more animosity. And I think for other states that are contemplating wolf recovery, considering wolf reintroductions, it makes them less likely to want to get involved in wolf recovery. I know that Colorado, there's pushes there to try to reintroduce wolves. And I know back years ago we talked about whether wolves should be reintroduced or encouraged in places like New York and Maine. I think a lot of states perceive this as this albatross they've got around their neck, this restrictions in their management authority because they've got this federally listed species. And I think it's created more animosity toward wolves. Work that Eric Olson has done out of Northern College shows that periods when wolves are most protected is also when we have the highest rates of illegal kill of wolves. So it seems like there's kind of a backlash that occurs.
What happens if there's a farmer's livestock is attacked? And what would happen in contrast, or could happen, if wolves were delisted?
Well, whenever there's a suspected depredation, the farmers contact the USDA Wildlife Services, already contact DNR, but then get in turn with USDA Wildlife Services, who are kind of the agents of the state as far as investigating and managing wolf depredations. And an agent from that service will then come to the farm, investigate the depredation, determine if it was caused by wolves. If it's caused by wolves, then the farmer will get full reimbursement from the DNR. And at this point, various non-lethal methods are used, improving electric fencing, scare devices, things such as flattery, which are flags that are kind of placed around pastures. Sometimes it might be encouragement of changing in farming practices, including guard animals when possible. But guard animals take time to train and to habituate to the flocks, and they work best for sheep and don't work always as successfully for cattle. So it's kind of a mixture of things. But the thing they don't do is they don't try to trap and remove the wolf that's causing the depredation. So the thing that changes once they're federally delisted is one of the options is federal agents can trap and euthanize the wolves that are coming on the farm. The second thing that they can also do is our DNR issues permits to the farmers that they can shoot wolves that are coming on the land, and the farmers themselves will have the right to shoot a wolf in the act of attacking livestock or other animals on their property. With non-lethals, farmers can perhaps push wolves off of their farm, and what's been seen is then the wolves go on to the next farm and start causing depredation there, and non-lethals are used there, and they push them off of that farm and starts at a third farm, and without removing the problem wolves, reduce the problems in one farm, but just kind of pushes on to another farm.
Are those measures a given when the wolf would be delisted, or would those details have to be worked out in the state's management plan?
Well, a combination. The state has its own authority. Once they're delisted, the state decides when they allow lethal controls. Okay. But then it's totally up to the state to decide when lethal controls are going to be done. There is an intermediate step, which is going from endangered to threatened, which maintains some level of federal authority, but does give the state authority to remove, with government trappers or government agents, problem wolves. But farmers themselves, and the state doesn't have authority to issue permits to farmers or landowners to kill wolves under those circumstances. So the authority is broader once they're delisted, and then the state has full management authority.
Again, you know, the wolves were delisted briefly. The state DNR was in the process of updating 1999 management plan. That's been stuck in limbo, and then,
well,
of course,
the 99 plan was completed.
Okay.
So, yeah, that was a completed plan.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, and there was a addendum added to that plan in 2007. So those are completed plans, but there hasn't been an update since 99. And the 99 plan set a management goal of achieving a population of at least 350 wolves for the state outside of Indian reservations, which should be just slightly less than a statewide count. That hasn't been updated, and there are many people who feel that 350 goal is kind of set in concrete and the state needs to push back to a population of 350. But many of us, including Timberwolf Alliance, Wisconsin Green Fire, believe the 350 goal is now an outdated goal based on old concepts of potential carrying capacity and population viability analysis.
So what is the best number thought to be?
Well, at this point, we're not sure exactly what the best number is. Jen Stenglund from UW-Madison, now a scientist with DNR, did modeling and determined that the potential carrying capacity could be something like 1,240-some wolves for Wisconsin. But there's a confidence interval on that. And so something that approaches the carrying capacity is probably more reasonable. But in some ways, I think there ought to be less emphasis on numbers and just the health of the current population, make sure that there's reduced depredations, that they're not causing high levels of conflicts. At the same time, maintain healthy populations where they're doing ecological benefits, where they're benefiting the ecosystem.
So how are they benefiting the landscape?
Some of the research we've done shows that in place where we've gotten wolves and done, when I say we've done, it's DNR has assisted other researchers, but showing greater diversity of wildflowers in areas where the middle of wolf pack areas, less so when you get to the edge of wolf pack areas where there's a greater concentration of deer activity, better growth of various deciduous trees, maple trees, less browsing on those that are in the middle of wolf pack areas, and better growth of the trees in the middle of wolf pack areas, rare plants, trilliums, members of the lily family doing much better, healthier plants in the middle of wolf pack areas, less so at the edge of wolf pack areas. Wolves might be a factor, reduces the potential for chronic wasting disease to spread into a deer population. Thus far, there's not been actual research on wolves in chronic wasting disease areas, but research has been modeling work that suggests that having wolves would reduce the chance that chronic wasting disease would spread. The other level of evidence is that in Colorado, it's been shown that cougars are very selective of animals that have chronic wasting disease compared to hunters, and wolves tend to be much more selective hunters even than cougars are, so that suggests that they would be very selective of animals that show any kind of weakness. And the third set of evidence,
meaning that, excuse me, that they go after the weak, it's not as though which is a benefit to the population, because you're culling out.
Right, because wolves, when they hunt, they go through almost a testing process of the animals. They run them for some distance. Unlike cougars that have a very short stalking and then charge and attack the animal, there isn't the level of testing that occurs with wolves, where they run them for hundreds of yards before they either catch the animal or decide they're not going to be able to catch them. So there's much more of a testing process with wolves. And I guess the third level of evidence is that, in general, we've not seen much in the way of chronic wasting disease in wild deer herds in areas where there's healthy wolf populations in Wisconsin. So it's hard to test for the impact of wolves on chronic wasting disease when it's not happening where wolves are living. But that in itself is sort of part of the evidence, is because it isn't occurring where the wolves are living. So because chronic wasting disease is such a concern, and any factors that can help prevent the spread of chronic wasting disease are going to be something we really should be looking at.
The DNR should be looking at an updated management plan. What should be part of that planning?
Yeah, I think one thing obviously is updating the population goal. The other is making sure that's a lot of sound science used in managing a wolf population. I think recommendations for modifying the wolf harvest, the way the harvest currently is being implemented, that was legislatively presented, requires the DNR to hold a hunting season if they're not listed as endangered or threatened by the state or federal government. And instead of a requirement, there ought to be that DNR may allow the hunting of wolves, and give the DNR authority to set aside areas where wolves don't need to be hunted, where they're providing a lot of ecological benefits, where there's cultural benefits to, like, Native Americans for the presence of wolves. Provide more opportunity to protect wolves in and around Indian reservations under current regulations. DNR does not allow hunting on tribal lands, but hunts occur right up to the edge of reservations, and there's not a single wolf pack in a Native American reservation that doesn't extend its home range beyond the reservation boundary. So every wolf pack is potentially susceptible to being hunted and trapped under current regulations. More flexible control on when wolves ought to be hunted and not hunted, what portions of state should be open and not opened, those are some of the things.
What's known in the science about wolf behavior that can reinforce the importance of the wolf on the landscape? And what is a myth, or what are myths that are hindering that?
Regardless of the group we talk to, it seems like so often we hear, well, there's a lot more wolves out there than what the DNR says there. And in part is because the way the counting system occurs, minimum count assumes you are probably going to miss some animals, that the count is based on animals you can actually detect by animals you see from the air, or the tracks that you see on the ground, or reliable reports you get from the public. So in that process, it's like you're always going to be missing some animals. So it's a minimum count, and means it could be 5-10% more. It's also done at the lowest point in the annual cycle of wolves. So much of the year, there's more wolves on the landscape when the pups are born in the spring. For a while, the population doubles. So of course, there'd be a lot more wolves on the landscape most of the time than what the DNR minimum count is. So I think the counting system itself is one of those things that people have a lot of suspicions about and don't quite trust. And I think also because wolves are so mobile that when you've got good tracking snow, as we did during this last winter, a hunter may see five tracks by one place he's hunting and be 5 miles down the road, see five more tracks and assume there's another five wolves, and it could easily be the same pack covering an area 5-10 miles across. So the assumption that there's a lot more wolves because they're very mobile animals and you're seeing their tracks in a lot of different places, but it could be the same pack that you're seeing over a lot of areas. And there's a perception too now that the deer herd is declining in places because of the wolf population, and I guess records from the population information from a year or two ago shows that statewide we're at near record numbers, and even in northern Wisconsin, the population is doing quite well. There was a decline in the deer population in 2014 because of some severe winters, and that's the biggest factor that generally affects the deer population. But people have a tendency, if when they don't see deer and they're seeing wolf tracks and they're not seeing as many deer tracks, they're going to readily blame it on wolves. So I think that's probably a big one. The impact on livestock, the depredations, I know there's a lot of fear that that's causing higher levels of depredation. The numbers of animals that are actually killed by wolves is relatively low. There's also some concern that the non-lethal effects of presence of wolf packs, and it's one of those things, there isn't a lot of research that can demonstrate it. Certainly if wolves are constantly running cattle and not killing them, it's going to be having impacts on weight gain and survivability and diseases amongst cattle. But in general, when wolves chase animals on a regular basis, they're testing them, and eventually they're going to be killing them, and then there'd be control actions done on those wolves. And I think once we have a little bit more lethal control, I think there'd be greater appreciation that the resentment might not be as great toward wolves when they're causing livestock depredation. But I know there's some perceptions that they're having impacts on weight gain of cattle, and there just isn't a great amount of research that really demonstrates that outside of very specific, unusual situations.
So when you consider the arc of your experience and growth of knowledge around wolf biology behavior, what stands out?
I guess I continue to be amazed by how how broadly they've spread across the landscape, that they're able to live in so many places that we just 15, 20 years ago would never have thought would have been suitable wolf habitat. I guess I'm surprised that they're still continue to be listed as an endangered species in this region when the Great Lakes is a very healthy wolf population, where, on the other hand, places like Wyoming, I could see a lot of problems with their wolf management, where 85% of their state, people can shoot wolves year-round, and yet that's been supported through the courts for wolf conservation, and the 6,000 wolves in the Great Lakes region somehow keeps getting relisted as an endangered population.
In the case of Wisconsin and those who have pushed back, has a good portion of that concern been focused on Wisconsin's hunt and the methods of hunting that are allowed within it?
The actual reversal of wolf delisting wasn't based on the fact they're hunted, because that wasn't an issue that the federal courts could relist wolves on. But I think the fact the hunting was occurring so aggressively and frustration with that was probably incentive for filing lawsuits and for those supporting those lawsuits. I think that was a big part of the incentive, was frustration with the hunting seasons that were being done in Wisconsin. And the unfortunate thing about the way the legislation works right now, too, is that I had always wanted and hoped that the concept of delisting and the concept of when and if you have a hunting season were two separate issues and be kept separate. And unfortunately, the legislature tied them together with this legislation. And for those who support delisting but may not necessarily support hunting of wolves, it's caused a lot of those people now to support keeping them on the endangered species list. So, unfortunately, we often hear wolves are protected under the Endangered Species Act, and then all of a sudden the protection is removed. And in a sense, it's not really removed. It's a different form of protection, because as a state-managed species, there's still levels of protection. There's still closed seasons. There's only a limited number of people who can hunt and trap wolves during those hunting seasons. The hunting seasons are open for periods of time and enclosed for much of the year. So there's still a protected species, just as we would consider bears and geese and deer protected species, even though there are special hunting seasons. But it's a different level of protection than certainly when they're an endangered species.
Adrian Wiedevan was the wolf biologist for the Wisconsin DNR from 1990 to 2013. He spoke with WUWM's environmental reporter, Susan Benz.